do that. The speaker tonight, as many of you may know, has done some acting. Felina likes the show Grey's Anatomy, and she's in the 10th season of Grey's Anatomy. And our speaker tonight plays a role in that, where he comes into the hospital and he has a broken ankle. They diagnose him with a terminal illness, and they go to him and tell him about his terminal illness. And he says, "Oh, I knew about it. I knew. I've got a year left to live. I know. That's why we've been traveling the whole world. Me and my wife have been traveling the whole world, spending all our money, doing everything we can to enjoy life because I got a year left." Grey's Anatomy fixes him. They cure his character in the show, and he starts crying. "You spent all my money. I don't know what." So now our speaker tonight in the real world is going to come and talk about how Alcoholics Anonymous has saved his life. I'd like to introduce Jerry B. from Los Angeles.
How's that?
Great.
I'm Jerry. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Jerry.
Hi, it's nice to be here. Thank you. Thank you, Lee, for asking me to come up. Had a nice dinner with Lee and Debbie and Felina and Vinny, who has 9 months, which is more important than probably anything I'm going to say tonight. That's amazing. We were talking about the fact that, like, how much more difficult 9 months is than, you know, 20 years or 30 years or 40 years. It's a miracle. I'm going to try not to... We're in a church. I'm going to try and watch my language. Jesse, Allison, and Diane, I'm so glad you guys are here. I hope you get to stick around. I hope you get to find a woman with a big book and a knowledge of the steps, and that you can hang out and have the experience that, you know, so many of us have had. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I have a sponsor. He has a sponsor. I have sponsees. I go to meetings. I'm not the same guy I was in really any way, shape, or form 21 years ago when I got here. I'm as physically, so I got here on the 26th of September. I'm as physically sober as I was on the 27th. That's the same. But I am a completely different person inside. I thought that AA was about drinking and drugs. And I found out it's really about finding a God of your own understanding that can solve all your problems. It says it right in our book. It says, the whole purpose of this book, this one right here, is to help you find a God that can help you solve all your problems. So it's not about, this isn't a book that's going to help you quit drinking or taking drugs. That's not the point. It's important, but it's not the point. The point is to help you find God or power greater than yourself. So I'm going to talk tonight, I'm going to tell you my story. And I'm going to tell you about what happened. And what happened has a lot to do with that God. And the spiritual experience. Psychic shift. So if you're new, I really want to help. I really want to say welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. If you're new or you're wondering or you're not quite sure. If you have a lurking notion. I want to tell you that my experience here has been the most important. It's been the most life-changing thing I've ever done. I'm from Boston. I'm the oldest of four boys. We're Irish. We're Catholic. Everybody drinks. Everybody gets very drunk. And we're either drinking or we're sober. The ones that keep drinking, you know, have really mediocre, painful, horrible lives. And I saw what AA was like. You know, my dad got sober when I was 16. I saw it help him. I saw what it did for him. but I didn't really want to have anything to do with AA. I saw you guys outside smoking cigarettes, and I didn't want anything to do with that. I was a scared kid, like a really scared kid. Like everything scared me. A mother who was mentally ill, I had a father who was an alcoholic. I recently took, there's a test you can take. I think it's called the ACE test. It's the adverse early childhood experience test. Because I said to my shrink recently, I said, how fucked up am I? Like, I'm just trying to figure out, like, because I know, like, I've been sober a long time. I've done so much work, but I know that I have a lot of stuff still going on as a result of the way I grew up, you know, the trauma. And she said, oh, well, how, you want to know? There's a test. There are 10 questions. I was like, hit me. She asked me 10 questions, and it's yes or no. And four or above, you're screwed. I'm an eight. I think, what were the ones that where I didn't? I was never molested, and neither of my parents went to prison. Otherwise, they all took place. And I found at about 16, I found the answer to feeling the way I felt all the time, which was super uncomfortable in my own skin and terrified. Like, why I was terrified, I didn't know. And I didn't know why everyone else wasn't terrified. It was confounding. Like, why do I feel like this? Like, I'm the oldest of these four boys. We're crazy. We brawl. We're strong. We do scary things. But why can't I go to sleep at night? Why are they all, like, out? And why am I laying there, like, just in this head that will not shut off? And that was the way my head was till, you know, I found alcohol. And we really didn't have parents. We had a house. We had rooms in the house. We went to decent schools. And we played sports and stuff. But there were no parents. There was just mental illness and drug addiction and alcoholism. And so we raised ourselves. And I found alcohol when I was about 16, 17, late with my head. Like, I could have used it around 7 or 8. And it allowed me to go home at night. It allowed me to go home from school and be okay. And then it allowed me to sleep. It allowed me to have this feeling inside of me that, like, I'd never experienced before. And you hear this over and over again. So, I'm an actor, as you may have just heard. Thank you for that synopsis of that episode. I have no idea what you were talking about or what that was, but sounds like an entertaining episode of television, I guess. And I went to New York. I was an actor. I found a woman in undergraduate who drank like I did and cleaned up like I did. That's what I needed. I needed a girl who would drink like I drank, take drugs like I did, and clean up so no one knew. Like, that was my thing. Like, all through school, I was real good at doing stuff and not getting caught. And she and I were really good at doing stuff and not getting caught. I ended up in a very prestigious program at a grad school in New York, and I had success, like Bill talks about. You know, I had success. Then he talks about, you know, how exciting it was in New York with success and alcohol, you know, and acquiring the code of can and following whatever the golf Doug Hogan bought. Ben Hogan around the golf courses. And that's what it was like for me, like in New York as an actor, young actor. Like having success and alcohol just being a part of it. And I was young and it was awesome. It was great. And we partied and shit happened. But we cleaned up. No one knew. You know, and there would be those nights where I remember one night she just left me in a bar. No one, I don't know how many of you are old enough to remember Quaaludes, but I was pretty drunk. Boy, those were fun. And I had taken a couple of Quaaludes and gotten really drunk. And I just laid down on McDougal Street in the West Village and in the dead of winter. And I just was ready to go to sleep there. And some guy found me and he brought me home. And I was only a few blocks away. And I had my keys. He helped me get into the apartment. And I went up and got in bed. He called me the next day. Because he asked me to give him my phone number. And I gave him my phone number. And he called it the next day. Like at 1 o'clock, he said, "Hey, is this Jerry?" And I said, yeah. I always acted like there was no problem. Yeah, this is Jerry, what's up? He's like, "I don't know if you remember me, but I helped you get home and I helped you open your door and I helped you get into the bed." And I'm like, not remembering any of this, but acting like I do. And he said, you seem like a really nice guy, but that was really scary, and I hope you're okay. And shit like that used to happen all the time. I'd be like, yeah, sorry, man. I what do we say? I forgot to eat, or, I mixed things. Always minimizing the stuff. Anyway, cut to, get to L.A., same shit in L.A. Now there's three children. So these two alcoholics, one's having success, have three children like right away. And it's pandemonium. We're really young. We're kids having kids. And it's pandemonium. But fun pandemonium. And it looks great. Like, it looks great. And I'm that guy with, the cars in the garage and the career and the house here and this and that. And, children, lovely children. And I know all the teachers. I'm coaching teams, I'm running marathons, I'm doing triathlons, and I'm dying inside. Like, I'm dying inside. But I was like, the actor that the book talks about. Like, I could just do it. I could barrel my way through life, muscle my way through life. And I did that. Marriage fell apart, but I just kept going, and I kept failing. Things just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and better and better and better externally. I'll tell you the story because it's kind of funny. I was on my second wife at the time and I was doing... she and I had been invited to this for me to give a talk down at a thing in, it was a guide dog convention or something. It was to raise money for guide dogs. And a friend of mine was, "That's, will you come down and will you speak?" And blah, blah, blah. Yes. And she, of course, I married another alcoholic and she cleaned up really well. And we both did. We went down there and I gave this talk, and I was doing what I traditionally did, a few drinks before the thing, a couple of joints. I'm not here. And then we get to the thing, and I do what I normally do, a few bottles of wine, just being charming, do this, that, and the other thing. I'm pretty hammered. We're both pretty hammered. We walk back to the hotel, and I said, "Let's just go into the bar for one more drink." And she said, "Let's just go up to the room." And I said, "Well, one more drink." I said, "I'm going to go in. You go to the room, and I'll be right up." And I went into the room. I went into the bar, and I'm having a few drinks, and you could smoke then, smoking a few cigarettes. And I am just in that place. I was kind of anonymous. I was by myself. I was looped enough, but still just loving life, looking around. And I see a couple of lesbian women, this is 21 years ago, sitting in a booth, kind of golf pro lesbians. They both have really short haircuts, and they are just so in love. And I am just looking at them, having my drinks, just romanticizing how wonderful it is that they can be doing what they're doing, and it's all okay, and everything's lovey-dovey, and I grab my drink, and I walk over to their table, and I say, excuse me, I just couldn't help but notice how lovely you guys look, and I am just so happy for you guys that we've come to a point in our history where you guys can just love each other the way you are, and it is just amazing. They invite me to sit down. I sit down, and we are just talking, and I'm rubbing their heads, and they're finding me charming, and we're all laughing, and my second wife, who was tall, with a temper, waiting, who had been waiting for me in the room, comes down. I stand up, she looks at me, she looks at them, and she cold cocks me. And they say, cool it, lady, we're lesbians, it's okay. Anyway, long story short, she goes up to the room, she packs her bag and the only bag, she packs her clothes and the only bag we brought, and she leaves, she gets in the only car we have, and she drives back, this is Del Mar, she drives back to LA. On the way to LA, she calls everyone in my family, all of my close friends, a lot of whom by this point are sober, and she says, Jerry's an alcoholic, this is going on, this is going on, this is, he's basically, you know, calls me out. Everyone's alarmed, this, that, and the other thing. I get home. So what do? Like what any alcoholic would do, I drain the mini bar. I just drink everything I can and I pass out. I wake up the next morning, crippling hangover, and I realize what took place. I put all my clothes in a pillowcase, and I walk to the train station in Del Mar, but I have to get a six pack to get on the train because I'm in such a bad way. I get on the train, I take the train to LA. My buddy Ed B, who's been around this program for a long time, he pulls up in his electric car. He opens the door. I look at him, I go, Eddie, the shit has hit the fan. And he goes, I know, buddy, I heard. And I go, Ed, and I'm finishing off the last beer, smoking a cigarette. I said, Ed, do you think I'm an alcoholic? And he goes, I don't know, buddy. Put the cigarette out, get in the car. He drives me home. I get to the house. The house is empty. I have custody of my children. They're gone. The wife's gone. Dogs are gone. There's a note on the table saying, we're gone. The kids will be in Santa Barbara at their mom's house till you go here, and on there is a men's facility, and they won't be coming back until you're gone, and every day you don't go, they're missing, you know, school, choir, sports, blah, blah, blah. You could have said, we're taking the house, we're taking the dog, we're taking the cars, we're taking everything, and I would have said, fine, that's okay, but, you know, my kids, you have me. Because I'd do anything for them. And I have a few drinks. I think about it, go over to a friend's house, and I say to them, do you guys think I'm an alcoholic? Anyway, long story short, I go. I go away to this place. And I drink everything in the house that night. And then in the next morning, another buddy who's sober comes, picks me up. They've orchestrated the whole thing. He picks me up. He drives me to Palm Springs. I remember we stopped at the Rite Aid because I hadn't packed a bag. I didn't even have a toothbrush. I was still fucked up, but drunk. I mean, sorry. And the Rite Aid with a toothbrush and maybe a few toiletries. And I'm checking out, and he's with me, and I just looked at she. I'm holding my toothbrush, and I just looked at her, and I said, I'm going to rehab. And he drove me to this men's facility down in Palm Springs. It was called Michael's House, and it was not a country club. And I got there, kissed me goodbye, said, I love you. He left. And there I was, men's facility, completely in denial, completely in denial. Like, but I have to be there. It was a great place. You know, they showed me to my room with three other guys. I'm like, you got any singles or anything? And they're like, no, this is your bed. And these are your guys. And there I stayed. You know, I was there for 3 weeks doing everything they asked me to do. I got all the chores, all the walks, you know, the process groups. I was there, you know, because I want you to love me. I want to be loved. I want to be good. I want so badly to just have the admiration of my fellows, but I'm not that guy. And that goes on for like 3 weeks, and I'm listening and I'm hearing, but it's not sinking in. And then one day, the reality of the way I had been living my life hit me. I don't know why, but there was a process, there was a staff meeting going on, and I was in more sight, I was in more pain than I'd ever been in before in my life. I'd been in, you know, I'd been busted by the police, I'd crashed cars, I'd been in bar fights, I disappointed people left and right. All that was always just a cost of doing business, right? If you feel the way I'd feel, you drink the way I drink, and this is what happens. I'm sorry. There's no other way for me to get through life. I have to do these things. I'm sorry bad shit sometimes accompanies them. And, but this was worse. This was like, and I just couldn't handle it. I literally could not handle feeling the way I felt. And I said to this, one of the techs guarding us, you know, Percy, I got to speak to Shard. I got to speak to Shard. And I'm crying. And he's like, no, man, they're in a staff meeting. You can't talk to Shard right now. I'm like, I got to talk to Shard. Anyway, I run in there. I burst into the staff meeting. I go to her and I say, Shard, this beautiful 65-year-old woman. I go, Shard. And by the way, when I got there, the first day I got there, this is me. I found a weight pit outside, and I'm like, this isn't a big deal, but I should probably get a quick workout in. So I start like lifting, and the director of the program is like walking by going, what in God's name are you doing? You're deep. What are you doing? Go to bed. Go to bed. I just wanted to pretend nothing was wrong. Then that later that day, I see Shar, who was to be my counselor, this woman that I'm, who I'm about to beg for my life. And I say, hey, Shar, hi, Jerry Burns, how are you? I hear you're going to be my counselor. Great to see you. This is my first day. And she's like, yeah, honey. Okay, you can stop that right now. Heard all about you. That's not going to work. So I'm like, wow, okay. Unhappy. 3 weeks later, I am begging her to come out of the meeting so I can just talk to her. And I just she put her arms around me. She took me to her office, and I said, "You don't understand. I can't feel the way I feel right now. I cannot. You have to give me something. You have to give me things. I cannot survive this. I can't survive this because I drink because I can't tolerate the way I feel. That's why I always drink." Because I can't tolerate the way, and now I'm feeling it, and I haven't had a pill, I haven't had a cocktail for a long time, and I'm feeling things in a way that I've never felt them before, and I begged her, and she said, honey, I can't, you know, I can't give you anything, and I said, well, she said, I will ask you to breathe into this paper bag, because you're going to hyperventilate and fall on my floor and crack your head open. So I did that, you know, I'm weeping, blah, 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 blah. And I finally said, like, what do you expect? What do you, so then what do you want me to do? What do you want me to do? She said, I would suggest that you go into that room with the guys and that you hit your knees and you ask for help. And I just went, you know, I don't know what happened in that moment, but I got in God's grace enough that I went, okay, and I walked out of the room, and I went to my room. I went into the bathroom because I was embarrassed to kneel down by my bed. And I just said, God, I don't expect I can ever feel okay again, but I can't survive feeling the way I feel. And something happened in that room. I had a spiritual experience in that room. And I just started pouring through the literature. Like, I bought that what I was hearing was, if you want to never feel that way again, this is what you need to do. So I opened up the book. And I'm trying to figure out like where the steps are, and it's Bill's at war, and Bill's here, and this is going on, and guys are jumping from towers, and there's a depression, and there's this. And I'm like, but where are the steps? And so I opened up the 12 and 12. And like there, it was like step one was step two. I mean, step one, the chapter one was step one. Chapter two was step two. And like, it was very linear. I'm like, okay, so what do I do? And I bought that I needed to do these three things like right away. I needed to admit that I was powerless over alcohol, that my life had become unmanageable, and then I needed to find a God, and then I needed to turn my will and my life over to that God. I bought. That was my only shot. And so, one, two, and three, I can't, he can, I'm going to let him. I started listening in the meetings. It started to resonate. I started to feel different. Wanted to feel shitty when I go back to the weeping, crying Jerry. You know, some guy would come over to me and say, hey, why don't you go talk to that guy? He just X, Y, and Z, and it was much worse than what had just happened to me. I go over, I talk to that guy. All of a sudden, if you're like, wait a minute, I'm not even thinking about my problems. I feel better. We're in a meeting about a month and a half in, and I saw the promises. You know, they take you to outside meetings. I saw the promises on the wall. And I'm like, promises? What is it? And after meeting, I went up to a guy and I said, hey, my name's Jerry, I'm an alcoholic, and my life is so screwed up right now. You have no idea. What is that? What is that? He said, those are the promises. I'm like, where's that? Where do I find those? He goes, they're in the big book. Big book of Alcoholics Anonymous? Yep. I'm like, okay, is it your experience that any of that stuff comes true? He's like, it's my experience that it all comes true. I'm like, okay, dude, do not screw around with me right now because you have no idea the pain I'm in. He's like, that's my experience. Now I have one, two, and three, and I have this guy telling me that that will happen if I do the rest of these steps. I think it was the next day my counselor calls me into her office, Char, and she says, I have great news. I said, what, I'm going home? She said, you can go home. You've done a great job. You can go home. I said, okay, what's the great news? She said, you have amazing insurance. You can stay as long as you want. And I said, but I got to go home. You know, I got to get back to my life, and I got to get back to the crazy alcoholic wife, and we got to get, you know, I got to sort shit out, you know? She's like, I said, can I call my dad? She said, call your dad. Went outside, I said, dad, he's now 48 years sober, whatever. I said, dad, they say I should stay. He said, you should stay. Click. And I went back into her office and I just said, tell me when to go home. And I stayed till they told me to go home. I stayed for like 3 months. And I got out of there, and my crazy ex-wife picked me up, and I said, I got to go to a meeting right now. I'm terrified. I don't ever want to drink again, but I so want to drink, you know? Yeah. I still wanted to drink. And I hear all these people go, yeah, the obsession, it just got lifted. First day, it's just like, it's gone. I'm like, I just want to drink. I don't want to drink, but my cellularly, I want alcohol. Like, I never threw up. My body loves alcohol. I never threw it up. Just it feels good inside of me. I feel horrible the next day, but I never rejected it. So I started going to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings in LA, and at about 6 months in, I'm sitting in a meeting, and I just was like, I raised my hand to share. I'm like, yeah, you guys, this is great for you guys, I guess. I'm going out of my mind with this. Sitting in meetings, I'm going to meetings like 2 times a day, and I'm going out of my mind. So I'm just saying it. Anybody has any ideas? By the way, that's the last time I ever said in a meeting about Alcoholics Anonymous. If anyone has any good ideas, come to me after the meeting. Go to your sponsor. The guy that I least want to come up to me, of course, comes up to me. And he said, Richard Z. And he said, have you written a 4-step out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous? I said, well, I wrote like one on the filled in the blanks treatment. He goes, have you written a 4-step out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous? And I said, the blue book? No, I have not. He said, you want to? I said, whatever you got. We went out to my truck. I remember it was raining. We opened the book. We read the 4-step. He laid out the columns on a legal pad. I had no idea what he was talking about. But I went home and I did it. And took about 3 months. It was long. Because I said, how long is it supposed to be? He's like, well, the book says if you've been thorough, you've written down a lot. That's what it says, right? So what's a lot to you? I'm like, okay. He says, write that down. So I did that. I read it. And my life started to change. You know, I started to feel very different in Alcoholics Anonymous. He didn't really last as my sponsor. But the thing is, the steps are personality proof. Like, I didn't particularly enjoy this man, his company, but the steps are personality proof. And I got in with another guy, and he was part of a group called the Solutions Group. And the Solutions Group was based on the inventory process, and I got invited to that meeting, and that's where I spent my first 3 years in a group of men who were staying very current with the inventory process, with my fears, my resentments, which were myriad. I was new. I hated everything. And my sexual misconduct, right? And we just did step work, and we sponsored guys, and we went on retreats, and we just did the deal. And I was starting to feel different, and really different. And, you know, I was sponsoring guys, and no one stayed sober, but I was just going to treatment centers and doing step work in the car and Skid Row and just like back and forth and back and forth and doing all this stuff. I remember this amazing experience of being like second year doing I was doing a movie in Utah, dead of winter, small town. And it was when I was needing meetings, like really needing meetings. And I found a meeting in this little town one night, gave the address, and the address was the post office, which turned out to be like the post office and the polling place and the fire station and the police station. And I find this place, it's snowing, I take a cab, there's a foot of snow on the ground, and I find it, and I'm like, I walk up the back stairs into a room on the top of what was, looked like the fire station, I guess. There was a fire engine in there, and there's one guy sitting at a table with suspenders. And I go, it's the meeting. He's like, yeah, come on in. I sit down at the table. It's a small table, and it's just him. 7:30 comes. No one else is in the meeting. And he's probably 70 years old, old-timer. And now it's 7:35. We're just chatting. And I said, so should we start the meeting? He's like, we started. And I said, he said, you want to say the Serenity Prayer? I said, sure, let's say the Serenity Prayer. And then after that, he said, so I'm going to tell you about me, and then you tell me about you. You want some coffee? I'm like, sure, I'll get some coffee. I get some coffee. We just talked for like an hour. And then, you know, at the end, we prayed. And then I said to him, hey, so are there nights when, like, no one shows up? He goes, a lot. And I said, so, but what do you do? He said, I'm just here every night on Wednesdays at 7:30. I was like, you know, Whoa, what have I gotten myself into, you know? My life is changing, I'm meeting people like this. Ooh, this is crazy. I had an experience at about 8 years where I was, my belly button, I was working in New York and my belly button birthday happened, and my girlfriend at the time, who would become my wife, my third wife. How much time do I have? Just keep talking? Oh, okay. I got a lot of wives to get to. Anyway, I was with my last wife, actually, and she said, "What do you want to do? It's your birthday. What do you want to do?" And I said, "I would love to go to lunch, and then could we go up to the World Service Organization up on Riverside?" And she said, "Is that an AA thing?" And I'm like, yeah. And she said, "Sure, whatever you want to do, let's do that." So we have lunch. We go to the World Service Organization, which was about 20 blocks from where I was living at the time. And the World Service Organization, it's on the 8th floor of this building on Riverside. Press the button, go up, doors open. And I walk in, there's a lady at the desk, and I say, "Hey, hi." And she says, "Oh, welcome to World Service." I'm like, "Oh, hi. Yeah, could we just," she said, "do you want a tour? Do you want to just walk around?" And I said, "Yeah, could we just walk around?" She goes, "Yeah, go on in there. You'll see all sorts of cool stuff." And Bill's couch is in there, actually. I'm like, "Bill's couch is in there?" She goes, yeah. So anyway, we walk in there, and there's all this archival stuff, like photographs of Bill and Bob and letters under glass of like letters from Bill to like Dr. Tebow, letters from Bill to Dr. Silkworth, letters from Bill to Carl Jung, all these gorgeous photos. And then I come to this photo. It's a black and white photograph. And it's the Mayflower Hotel. And if you don't know, that's where Bill walked into the lobby and he really wanted a drink. And he found a church registry. In the back of the photograph, you can see the bar with the lights. You can hear the twinkling of the gay chatter in there. And then there's in the photo, there's the directory, and then there's the phone booth where he made the call to find Dr. Bob. And I'm looking at this photograph, and I just started to lose it, because I was like, this photograph is why I have the life that I have today. And I couldn't compose myself. And my wife was just like, "Honey, what is it?" I'm like, and I tried to explain it to her, and I mean, I'm getting emotional right now. She said, "Are you okay?" I said, I'm good. She said, do you want to just hang out by yourself?" I'm like, "No, you can stay." And she's like, I'm going to go home. Why don't you hang out?" Why? She doesn't know what the hell is going on. And I'm like, okay. And then, you know, that was another thing where I was just like, wow, what have I gotten into? It was early in my sobriety when I was really struggling. It was before that 6-month announcement. Before I'd written a 4-step, I had come home one day and I'd gone into my bedroom. I'd opened the door and then my bed was over there, and I was just having a hard time, and I went over to the far side of the bed and I knelt down. I knelt down. I was just praying. You know, just begging God for help. And like, I didn't expect it, but one of my kids, Lukey, came home from school early. And he opened the door and walked into my room. Now, we were not a kneel down by your bed praying family. My kids had not seen their father. And I just looked up. I didn't say anything. He didn't say anything. He's probably 13. And he just walked over to the close side of the bed and he knelt down. And I said my prayer. He seemed to say a prayer. And then he walked around and he hugged me. And he said, "Dad, it's all going to be okay. It's all going to be okay." Because this is a family disease. Like, my kids had all had experienced it, right? I mean, I was there. I showed up. But it was intense. It's just intense to live with us. It's hard. It's hard. The kids don't know what's going on. Like, why is he this way one time and this way another time? And what can I count on? And where's the consistency? And that's the way he'd grown up. I came home early on at 5 months from a meeting one night, and I walked into my son Jake's room. I went in to kiss him goodnight, 9:30 at night, thinking he was asleep, and he was just crying in bed. And I said, "Honey, what's the matter?" And he, crying through his tears, said, "Are you okay?" Like, because they knew that that old life was gone, but they had no idea how Dad was going to navigate this new life. And it was a time where, right when I got sober, everything fell away. Like, the wife left, the crazy alcoholic wife. She was just like, she wanted to do the dance of death with me. You know what I mean? She wanted to, you know, get into it. Let's get into the craziness. Let's fight. And let's make up. And let's have the drama. And let's have that. Let's have that, this relationship that we always had. I'm like, "Oh, I'm going to take a nap. I need to pull myself from this." And she couldn't, you know. If I was in her position, I couldn't have handled that either. She left. And I do not want to be left. You know what I mean? I grew up the way I grew up. Please don't leave me. Right? Please don't leave me. Just look, she's gone. Career's in the toilet. House is going. Fancy house in the hills. That's going. Now, I've gone back a little, right? She left, bank account's gone, career's in the toilet, now the house is going. This is early on, right? I kind of jumped ahead to get to New York and that stuff. But the point is, had all that stuff not happened early in my sobriety, because all I could do was pour myself into Alcoholics Anonymous. In those first few, that's all I could do. I'd be driving down Ventura Boulevard, like smoking a butt, looking at, this is when the meetings were in a little booklet, trying to find the next meeting, listening to an AA tape, just like, get me to the third meeting of the day. You know what I mean? Out of my mind. And then by the time, now when I skipped, I head to New York, you know, I'm on a Broadway, you know, I'm back in New York. I'm in a Broadway play. You know, stuff is all coming back. It doesn't matter. Everything can come back. By the way, I've never made as much money as I did the last few years of my drinking, and I probably never will. But it doesn't matter. I don't care, right? Like, I loved my little bed in rehab. I loved my little tiny bed and my little tiny candle. Life was simple. I was terrified to leave. I was terrified to come back. Okay, so now I'm in New York, I'm doing the play, I meet a woman, probably 12 years sober. This woman became my third wife. Her name is Leslie. We meet, she loves me, I love her. She said, "Will you come back to LA? We'll try and make a go of it." I said, "Sure." I'd never met anyone like her. I'd met people like them. I'd never dated them. You know, they were organized. They were smart. They didn't have an alcohol and drug problem. And I decided to take, you know, like, contrary action. And I loved her. She was great. She was, you know, people say, "What did you love so much about Leslie?" And I'm like, she was super organized. You know, anyway. We have a lovely working relationship, and it's my first sober relationship, you know? We're together for like 3 years, and she says, "I think I want to have a baby." I'm like, my kids are all like gone now. I'm like, I'm not, no, not with me. She said, take the summer, think about it. We take the summer. I assume she'll forget about that. Well, women, it turns out, don't forget about wanting babies. Labor Day comes. She goes, what do you think? I'm like, about what? She goes, about the baby thing. I'm like, oh, honey, I don't think I can have a baby. I mean, I'm like old and kids are in grad schools and blah, blah, blah. And she goes, well, I don't know if I can do this. I'm like, because I may not ever find another you, but I have to have a baby. I'm like, okay, we break up. I last a week. I'm just like so miserable without her. I just crawl back. Okay, we can have a baby, whatever you want. We're going to just don't leave me. Just don't leave me. It's like my shrink said, you will do anything to keep people around, including having a baby that you would rather not have. So we have this baby. Thank God we have this baby. It's not his name's Henry. He's 13. He's a gift from God. I mean, I'm so happy this happened. But and my life in AA had been just miraculous. Like I found at 5 years a meditation practice, which just totally turbocharged the 12 steps for me. I was telling the people that I had dinner with, these lovely people that I had dinner with tonight, I was like, I was driving down here thinking like, I don't know how I'm gonna give an AA talk tonight because I'm so pissed off at so many people. And I'm super annoyed. I've got all these resentments. I haven't meditated yet. My sponsor's not picking up. I haven't done any writing on this shit. How am I gonna do that? And I pulled over and I meditated for 15 minutes and I made some calls and I got alcoholics on the phone. And I thought about my part. And then I got here and I pulled into the parking lot 15 minutes early before dinner. I meditated again. You know, I really talked to God. Like, you know, I really said, you know, dude, I really need your help here. I feel like crap. I'm full of self. And I really don't want to go into speaking to my fellows feeling this way. I don't want to. And I know I don't have to. But I always think like, will it work if I write a 10-step? That won't work. And then all of a sudden, a day later, I forget what the resentment was that I'm like, what was that resentment I had that I had to write about? Oh yeah, that guy, I fucking hated that guy, but he's so nice. So we have this boy, he's amazing. We buy this old, old house. We restore it within an inch of its life. It's 1905 it was built. You know, I'm loving the work I'm doing. By the way, as an actor, prior to getting sober, I loved what I did. But it was kind of what I did till we got to the bar. And that was where I really had kind of a spiritual experience. Do you know what I mean? And I have a really fun job. Like, what I do for a living is I'm very blessed to do. But I never liked it as much as I liked drinking after it. You know? That was my spiritual experience. Because I was full of fear in my work. So no matter how accomplished I was always terrified. When I got sober, all of a sudden, all that fear was gone. And I just got to love what I did. Do you know what I mean? I got to love that, but I also got to love just the simple stuff in life. Like I would see people in the park with their family when I was out there, and you know, and with little snacks and the dog and chucking the football, I'd be like, You know what I mean? It seems so. I need intensity. I need, and they'll just sit there for hours, just enjoying a picnic. I'm like, no one's you know what I mean? I need the jazz. I need the How's God gonna understand that? You know what I mean? How's God gonna understand my needs? Sometimes I still, you know, sometimes I'm like, I got this part, God, right? Like today, I'm driving down here. I'm like, no, I got it. Not thinking about anything other than, you know, how angry I am at him. How angry I am. Doesn't work. I got to go, God, help me clear myself to go be of service to these people. Okay? So back to Leslie and our son. So I'm having a great time in Alcoholics Anonymous. Like everything's going really well. And I'm growing spiritually. I'm becoming the man I kind of thought I wanted to be. I'm giving and receiving love in a healthy way. But I'm hearing all these people in Alcoholics Anonymous going through all this stuff. Like, people are dying. People are getting divorced. People are going out. This thing and that thing. And I'm like, wow, I've had a charmed sobriety. And one morning I came down into the kitchen and I said, honey, because stuff had been off. Honey, you still love me, right? And she looked at me and she said, of course I do. But she stammered. Of course I do. But we should talk. And I was like, oh, boy. Well, what did I do wrong now? You know, I think I'm going to get a lecture. I took the kid to school. I come home. I go, what's up? And she told me she's in love with someone else. And she's in love with a woman. And I'm like, okay, all right, okay. So, not that surprised, because, you know, I knew what our personal life was like. Not that surprised, but great. Okay, so we know this. I'm in complete denial. I'm like, so what should we do? What are we going to do? How are we going to do it? What should we do now? Like, how do we work it? You know, how are we working it? And she's like, but she doesn't want to say, like, I want to get a divorce. They don't know how to say that to me. So I'm just kind of in this denial place, and I would go to therapy, and I'd say, yeah, it's okay. We're working it out. And my therapist finally said to me, I'm going to ask Leslie to come in here. Is that okay? And I'm like, yeah, that'd be great. Yeah, we'll get some insights and make some plans on how we're going to do. I'm out of my mind. As I said. And so my wife comes in and she goes, Leslie, I'm here for Jerry, but I just want to ask some questions of you in Jerry's presence. She goes, shoot. So it's my understanding that you want a divorce from Jerry. You no longer want to have a relationship with Jerry. Is that correct? Of a marital type. She said, that's correct. Okay. Jerry, did you hear that? Yep. No problem. Yep. No problem. And also that you're interested in having a relationship, an emotional, connected, one-on-one relationship with someone else. This woman, Elizabeth. She goes, that's correct. And she goes, Jerry, so are you hearing this? You know, like literally have to lay it out. Anyway, one more time, I'm getting left. And you know how I feel when you leave me. And I fell apart. I like really, really, really fell apart. And because all I want is you to love me. That's all I want. Because I never had that. I drank because I didn't have that. I drank because of the feelings I got because I didn't have that. And now it's happening again at 16 years of sobriety. And of course I got through it. And the way I got through it was Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, and some outside help. Because sitting on that lady's couch, my therapist's couch, like weeping, and I'd say, what is wrong with me? Like, why can't I stop crying? What's wrong with me? It's just a woman. You know, I'm going to be fine. I got a lot. She goes, but it's not her. It's what happened a long time ago. You know, and I think that's true for a lot of us. Like, it's not what happens in the moment necessarily. It's what happened a long time ago to us, a lot of whom are damaged, right? There's a the saying in Al-Anon, if it's hysterical, it's historical. And anyway, left to my own devices, not in AA, I burn my house down with her in it. I get the dogs out, I get the kid out, and I burn it down with her in it. But I never had to make her wrong. You know, I never had to make her wrong. I never had to make her partner wrong. I never had to say anything bad about her to my son or in front of my son. Listen, it wasn't easy. It wasn't easy. But today we all live blocks from each other. You know, the kid goes back and forth freely. We have 50-50 custody. We crack up. She's married. She's a lesbian. You know what I mean? She was a lesbian for a long time before this happened. She's happy, and I'm happy. But I don't get to have this result in my life without Alcoholics Anonymous. Like, I just don't. But I don't know how to do these things without you guys and without the steps. I was telling Lee, I got in like a badass, horrible argument with a guy who was trying to do me a favor, and then we were talking, and he was gonna write me a letter for my kid for this school. And yes, he got hysterical this morning. This is part of the thing that was like a rotisserie in my head driving down here. But this guy went off on me. You know, and because I'm afraid, when people go off on me, I get like, come on. You know, that's my natural instinct. Come on, let's go. And that is not who I am anymore. I got to say to him in a note after I just walked away, you know, I'm so sorry for my part of the exchange this morning. I understand why you took umbrage. I was not thinking, I was thoughtless, and I so hope you will accept my apology. And if you would like to talk, if you would like to chat further, I would welcome that opportunity. You know, that's all I know to do today. You know, and the result was beautiful. You know, he writes back and says, but he, as I said, he took a while to write back. So, you know, during the 4 hours before he wrote back, I'm like, that mother. Not taking my apology now. And, you know, then I got. I don't know, you guys. There's a guy named Aldous Huxley who called Bill Wilson the greatest social architect of the 20th century. And I really believe that that's true. Like, I don't know. I know how it works. I know what we have to do in order to facilitate this psychic shift where everything that used to seem right is no longer that way. But I do know that for me, it has worked beautifully. And that when we get sober, 10 or 20 other lives change as a result. That's been my experience with my children. And their children, some of them have children, you know. I get to be a worker among workers. I get to give and receive love in a healthy way, in a way that, like, and I had no idea any of this stuff was accessible. I didn't even know this stuff was a thing. Like, do you know what I mean? I didn't even know, like, serenity was a thing. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't know any of this stuff existed. Do you know what I mean? So I'm really grateful that I was here tonight. I'm really grateful that you listened. I know I sort of rambled in the beginning. I was a little tired, but I'm so grateful for my life, and I want to thank you all.